100.3 K-Talk Podcast. Darkness Radio. Saturday and Sunday nights, 9 till midnight on 100.3 K-Talk.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio. We're your home for the best in paranormal talk radio every Saturday and Sunday night, 9 p.m. till midnight. You can join us here, hear about the strange and unusual, from ghosts to UFOs, Bigfoot, the Bermuda Triangle, psychic phenomena, and beyond. If you miss any part of our shows, go check them out at ktlkfm.com. Click on the Darkness Radio podcast link. There you're going to find it. Hey, guys, fans of Darkness Radio, I got something cool for you to check out. If you guys are fans of the TV show Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel, you can go check out travelchannel.com, and you'll see a link there for the Ghost Adventures Return to Bobby Mackey webisodes. There are three 10-minute webisodes that they're doing that took place at a live ghost hunt that we did at Bobby Mackey's earlier this year. And episode one is out right now. Episode two is due out this week. And guess who's in it? It's me. Can you believe that? Yeah, you can check it out. I was working the Shack Act and the Paranormal Puck, and they've got some cool video. And hopefully they got the wicked evidence that we were able to obtain. Got some really amazing EVPs and sound from that. So check it out. Again, go to travelchannel.com. Click on the Ghost Adventures Return to Bobby Mackey webisodes that are right there on the site. It's free. It's fun. And you also want to check out, after their premiere, their new episodes are starting up. And I believe it's on June 5th. The new season kicks off, and you guys are going to want to check that episode out. And then join them in the live chat room right afterwards. They have a huge announcement to make that involves yours truly. That's right. Something that the Ghost Adventures are working on, I'm going to be a part of. And you can check that out again by going to the Travel Channel and Ghost Adventures crew. Check them out. Be a part of the show. Spend some time with us on that. Tomorrow night, we're going to be joined by Robert Bess. And this is an exciting show. I'm exceptionally tweaked about having Mr. Bess on. 2 years ago, on the 19th of May, Mr. Bess created, a containment unit that he had created for spirits, and in front of a crowd of 140 people, including NBC film crew, they were actually able to capture two spirits in this containment field in front of, like I said, a large group. Tomorrow we're going to discuss this with Robert Bess, find out about the project that he did, how he caught these spirits, and what happened to them once he captured them. Amazing stuff. It's a great story. I hope that you'll check that out. Right now, though, we're going to go back to the phone line. We've got with us the lovely and talented Dr. Pamela Heath. And Dr. Heath, we were speaking mostly in the first hour about her book, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. It's a book co-written by John Klimo, J-O-N-K-L-I-M-O, and Pamela Heath, H-E-A-T-H, and you can get that book. I highly recommend it. It's an amazing read. Definitely one of the top books I've really enjoyed over the last 4 years of doing the show. So go check that book out for yourself. And another one of the books that I'd like to talk to you about is The PK Zone, Dr. Heath. But I do have a caller online, if you don't mind. We've got Joe from Minneapolis online. And Joe, thanks for your patience and hanging in with us. What's your question?
Thanks. It's an honor to be able to speak. So I was wondering what the doctor, as a parapsychologist, how she would define spirit, because my point is that in a 1945 dictionary I have, it defines it as breath. So,
yeah, first of all, Joe, it's probably time to go out and get a new dictionary.
No! Breath implies light.
No, I know, but if your only dictionary you have is a 1945 edition, it might be time to upgrade. You know, there's some cool new words they've added.
Well, it's a collegiate dictionary.
Dave, I was just impressed there was an American that owned a dictionary.
Well, that is true.
I would define it as consciousness.
Oh.
Separate from the body, a physical body.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, too. That's, and we're finding, now, do you believe, that, is there a difference between spirit and ghost?
I use the terms differently, just to conveniently indicate which spirits are stuck and which ones are not. So for me, a ghost is a spirit that is stuck near the physical plane. And a spirit that has finished its transition and can freely come and go, I refer to as a spirit. But they're all spirits, technically. I just sort of use it as a semantic convenience.
Okay. Let me make a quick mention right now, though. We do have another book to give away. Survivors of Atlantis is the book we have to give away. We'll give that away to the 11th caller. If you're interested, you can call in right now, 651-989-5855. You cannot have won in the last 30 days to qualify. If you want the copy of that book, Survivors of Atlantis, give us a call right now, 651-989-5855. If you're in the chat room and you have questions that you'd like me to bring up for our guest, you can always check me out and PM me, private message me in the chat room. For those of you listening online or at home and you'd like to be in the chat room, go to darknessradio.com, click on the live chat link. You'll find the link there, and you'll be able to join in and find other like-minded individuals seeking the truth, and be able to ask questions there as well. Let's go back to Dr. Heath on the line. And again, the other book that we wanted to talk to you about is called The PK Zone. And according to Professor Lloyd Auerbach, he gives you an amazing reference on that site. It says, The PK Zone is an amazing work of research and investigation into mind over matter, psychokinesis. Never has a book gone as deeply into both the research and experience of a psychic ability as this one. This book is a must-read for anyone who wants any kind of understanding of how the mind can reach out and interact with the world around us. I'm so intrigued by psychokinesis and by the whole idea of it. I like any kid after seeing Star Wars spent hours trying to use the Force to move my TV remote across the table to me.
Yeah.
Let's start to develop into that. Now, have you had actual moments of psychokinesis?
Yeah, well, that is really what anomalous healing is. It's mind over matter.
Okay.
At least when you're doing it on someone else, not yourself. I've had some other things move targets and bent metal and done other things, but basically the book was meant to be a textbook because at the time there was nothing in parapsychology that could act as a textbook on the subject, and nobody had even reviewed the literature on it since 1976. And I basically divide it into three parts. The first part looks at stories of mind-matter interactions from around the world since the dawn of time, because it shows that it's universal. And I also looked at the formal scientific research. And one of the things I wanted to say about research that I got cut off from before is that one of the problems with pointing to controlled blind research as the gold standard is if you believe in ESP, there is no such thing as a blind study.
That's true.
The unconscious mind knows what's going on. And so it's sort of an interesting thing that we're going to have to sort of deal with on some level as we move forward in the future. The last third of the book looked at the experiences of what it's like for people who do perform mind-matter interaction. And there's some clues to how it works. But I actually have pulled the book from print.
Really?
You'll find some used copies floating around, but I've written a revised version, updated, added whole new chapters on things like the staring studies, known as DeMille's, and mind-matter multiplication of matter, which research was done by a dentist, believe it or not, in San Francisco in the early 1900s, and a bunch of other new topics, and expanded the section on electronic voice phenomena and other things. And I am talking with a publisher about getting that done, but I'm not sure when that will be out.
Well, let's talk about some of the stories that were in your original book, at least, and talking about it. Because I'm like I said, I've always been interested in the whole psychokinesis view of it. And I understand what you're saying, the mind over matter. You know, when you're doing it on somebody else, it's psychokinesis. What is it when you're doing it on yourself?
Well, you don't know. It could be psychokinesis, but it could also be that you're controlling blood supply, because it's very clear that if you improve blood supply to an area, you speed up healing. So are you working on an energetic level? Are you working on a control of your autonomic nervous system level? It's a little harder to say when you're dealing with yourself, although I got to say, healing a paper cut, you know how those can just linger forever?
Yeah.
Healing those, you know, in a few hours, that's delightful, and I don't see how that can be blood supply.
Well, how do we do that? Because I'm getting paper cuts constantly.
Basically, the way I was taught to do it is sort of a focused concentration where you visualize or imagine pulling energy in from the universe, and you put whichever hand you absorb energy best with over your solar plexus, and you put the other one on the back of your head, what doctors would call the occiput of the head. And as you visualize breathing in, you're pulling the energy in, it's getting sucked, you know, in through the hand that absorbs energy. It's going up around your shoulders, out the other hand, into your head, and then as you breathe out, you see that often a pale blue color, white color of light filling your aura with healing energy. And what I found was if I would focus on that for a few minutes, it doesn't take very long, that's all it took.
Well, I'm curious, how do we figure out which hand draws in energy? What, are there tests that we can do?
Most people, well, you know, one way is to sort of experiment. I mean, you can put your hands very close together and sort of practice feeling the energy between them, the energy field. But I know for most people, they draw in energy best through their left hand and put it out best through their right hand. I'm the opposite. I think it just has to do with my personality. I like to be the opposite of everybody else. But
is that because it's the heart side and it's more of a pumping feature?
I don't know. Or is it because you're right-handed? I'm left-handed. I don't know. I just know most people, you know, tell me they feel like they draw better with their right hand and they put out better with their left draw better with their left hand and put out better with their right. And I know I do it the opposite. You experiment, you play. That would be my suggestion. But one of the things that seems to be important is the ability to focus. And that's where a certain amount of meditation, even if you do meditation as prayer, can be helpful because that can help you learn how to focus your mind.
All right. Well, now that's good because we've had that where we've talked to people in the past, especially about meditation. And my whole issue is, again, unable to quiet the mind enough. You know, it's when you were saying you've got to focus. If I'm looking at that paper cut, I'm going to start focusing, and then, you know, my mind is gone in about 10 to 15 seconds. How do we start?
A lot of people now. Well, you know, if you've ever read Larry Lachon's book, How to Meditate, he's got like 40 different ways. And one way does work well for people who have trouble stilling their mind and they can't empty their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But there do seem to be a lot of studies that suggest the ability to focus is really important when you want to talk about mind-matter control. Think of it, it's like light. When light is concentrated, it becomes a laser. It becomes very powerful. I think consciousness is very similar. If it's scattered all over the place, it doesn't have a lot of power to it. But if you can really focus it, even if it's just for a very short period of time, it can be quite effective.
All right, let's take a quick break here. We're going to give away Lost Pyramids of Rock Lake. It's a book about Rock Lake, Wisconsin. If you're interested, The Lost Pyramids of Rock Lake is a book we're giving away right now. You cannot have won in the last 30 days. Give us a call, 651-989-5855. 651-989-5855. We'll give that away again to the 11th caller on Darkness Radio right now. You're listening to our guest, Dr. Pamela Heath, and we'll cover more with her when we come back. Right here on 100.3 K-Talk.
The news, traffic, and weather you depend on. This is FM News Talk, 100.3 K-Talk.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio with our guest, Dr. Pamela Heath. And if you're interested in more from Dr. Heath, you can check out her website, PamelaHeath.com. PamelaHeath.com. And if you're on our website, if you're in the upcoming shows category, we have it as pamheath.com. But if you click it, it takes you there anyway.
Yeah, I actually did that. I'm my own webmaster.
Well,
so.
Well done, because, yeah, that's still in there. I don't know how we ended up with the shortened version, but pamheath.com will also get you there. I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about the psychokinesis aspect of this with maybe I'm using the wrong term, but can we use psychokinesis? It seems with spirit communication, a lot of times when we're collecting electronic voice phenomena, they seem to answer prior to us asking some of the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a form of psychokinesis? Is that just telekinesis? I mean, I don't know how to break it all down.
Well, telekinesis is technically movement of matter. Basically, one of the problems you get into with survival research is that almost everything that can be done that people think is survival, whether you call it EVP or you get other kinds of electronic transcommunication, video pictures from the dead, that kind of thing, there's no way to prove that you didn't do it yourself with your own mind-matter abilities. Because you happen to have everything a spirit has. You have a spirit, you have consciousness, and you have a body. They just have the consciousness part. So how do you know which of you is responsible for any physical effects? You don't.
Mm-hmm.
And you could use your own ESP to know what you wanted them to say, or to in advance know what you're going to guess, you know, for your question. It is really, it's a tricky area. And so when you talk to parapsychologists, we tend to sort of dance around the topic a lot. I think we drive people nuts because we don't want to give them a firm answer. But the fact is there's no way to know who's responsible.
Are you finding with your research in EVP, because it sure seems like a lot of the stuff that I've been watching as of late, it seems to be that it might be a lot more of us impressing upon the cassette or the digital recording a lot more than it is something that's actually spiritual in nature.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And
as a researcher, could they be using our energy that it is us impressing it, but it's them using us like a Ouija board?
It can be. The problem is, again, you don't know. It can be a mix of things. It could be the spirit. It could be us and the spirit working together. It could be us alone. However, one thing suggests that we're a critical portion of this, and that's that certain people seem to be able to get EVPs all the time. Others never get EVPs, no matter how hard they try. And that suggests that to some degree, we are acting as a medium, an old-fashioned channel, and that we're an important part of this.
Do you believe that there's any kind of issue between, and I don't know, I've never had the chance to really kind of work with you. I know that you're out at one of our Queen Mary events and we're there investigating, but, people have this issue with divination, you know, everything from EVP to Ouija boards to dowsing rods to pendulums.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that there is any inherent dangers to using these different divination tools? Do you believe that this could invite, you know, people ask me, Dave, what's the difference between using a shack hack, Frank's box, an EVP recorder, and using the Ouija board? And I always say, well, they're communicating through the recordings, through the machines to me. They're not, using me, like automatic writing, pendulums, dowsing rods. You're actually, it seems to me like you're giving more power to the spirit or more power to the energy to work through you. And I try to limit that myself. But do you, in the field, the way you've experienced it, do you feel that there's any differential in that at all?
I see a lot of people get screwed up by Ouija boards.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big problem, though, is, Matt, one of intention. When you are trying to communicate, are you just throwing the door open to anything, you know, no matter how hostile or negative or unenlightened it is?
Sounds like my dating life.
Communicate, you know, I don't care. Yeah, you're happily married. But I think a lot of it is intention. Or do you set the intention of parameters that we want communications only if they come from those with our highest and best interest at heart and who are going to give us messages that are meaningful? Because I would say the vast majority of EVP messages I've seen are useless.
Right.
I mean, they really are not particularly helpful. They don't tell us how to create better nuclear fusion or how to create world peace. I mean, they're
just a lot of get out.
Helpful.
Right.
Now, some of them are helpful in the sense that they just come back to tell us they love us. Mm. And that can be very healing. Or they come back to say, actually, I'm okay. Don't worry about me. As that other person mentioned, he got a message. And that can be very healing. And so that, to me, has a good purpose. But a great many of the messages that come through, I look at them and I go, is this really helpful? Or are we just entertaining ourselves? And it's hard to say sometimes. You know, I think the problem is that if people think that this is definitely from the spirit realm and they feel this is proof of the afterlife, the problem is they're just not understanding that they can be responsible for that too. And most parapsychologists feel that the best proof of survival actually comes from reincarnation research, which is done by Ian Stevenson, the University of Virginia, and others. That's, you know, that I would have to say is what convinced me that reincarnation exists. I was kind of a doubter before then, and I started reading the research. I was like, wow, you know.
Well, I'm curious with your, you know, saying that you're more kind of in the line of Buddhist. Do you, you know, an amazing theory I had on the paranormal with ghosts, and I'd like your take on this, was a good friend of ours, Misty Bay, had shared this with me a few years ago at UNIFCON, and it made a lot of sense to me. You know, we get visitation dreams where it seems a lot of spirits will come to us after a short period of time after death, grandma, mom, and they seem to have meaningful conversation and messages. Whereas the ghosts that we seem to encounter places like the Queen Mary or Waverly Hills, Eastern State Penitentiary, like you said, it's not like the messages are there. It's very rudimentary. It's very basic. Sometimes it's very territorial or animalistic almost. And her thought was that, you know, as energy transcends, you know, as you're making your move, would the best of you move to the next level and the crap stay behind? The petty, the angry, the greed, the jealousy, the rage, the territorialism. And that might be why we get such short answers and such disjointed or easily inflammable type of responses from the spirit world. Could we be dealing with what's been left behind is just the animal base instinct while the rest of the energy is transferred on to the next level to start in its next plane of existence?
Yeah, I haven't seen any messages that would suggest there's truth to that. It's more like people either go or they stay. It's not like they split in two. But one thing some people have said is that if you don't have a physical brain to hold the personality together, will it devolve? And I don't know. That could be a possibility in some cases. Look at somebody who's in solitary confinement for a very long time.
That's true. Yeah, they start to, without that ability to communicate and share, they start to lose the consciousness.
And some of these people, if they have no awareness of others in spirit, they have limited awareness of those in the physical plane. They're isolated, they're ignored, and they're only in their own head with nothing to distract them. I think if you're there long enough, it's not a real healthy place.
Well, I'd like you to start thinking, we're going to take a break again here in a few minutes, and I'd like you to think, if you could kind of walk us through when we come back, some techniques that you know of for people that might want to start experimenting with PK, you know, what can they do to influence, I don't know, either communication between people, communication with objects, you know, the ability to move things, the ability to heal. Just if you could give us some of the basics that people can start to do. I know there's no magic bullet, but I mean, there's got to be some of the little points that you can strike on just for people that are kind of looking to whet their appetite for this.
Okay.
Because, you know, again, that's the intriguing part to me. And it's so hard to go out and find people that you can have faith in this field, because even some of the people that come off extremely well-versed and knowledgeable, the flaky bit shows up and it just makes you start to question everything that you're doing. And I don't know if you found that, but in a lot of the people out there that are trying to educate, I get a great deal of information from them, but then all of a sudden it's, you know, they're giving it to, you know, I'm hearing this wonderful wisdom and information from this gentleman, and then he walks around the corner and he's wearing, you know, high heels and a skirt, and it kind of takes you back to, well, why am I listening to this guy again? You know, I mean, there's that quirkiness factor that seemed to be approached to so many of these people. But let's cover that when we come back. And again, check out her website, PamelaHeath.com. And if you want to meet Pamela Heath and learn more from her, come check out our event we're going to be doing at the Queen Mary. It's the first ever Darkness Radio Science Fair taking place this September 10th through the 13th at the Queen Mary. For more information on that and for a great lineup of all the great guests we have coming up, you can go check it out at darknessevents.com. We'll be back with more Darkness Radio the last half an hour here, wrapping up with Dr. Pamela Heath on 100.3 KTalk.
Don't be late for your daily meeting of the minds. Rush Limbaugh, Monday morning at 11, only on 100.3 K-Talk.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio, and I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Remember to join me again tomorrow night. Robert Bess is our guest, and we're going to be talking to him from 10 to midnight tomorrow night. We're going to be discussing the spiritual or ghost containment chamber that he actually created and successfully contained two spirits in. We'll be talking to him about that. We also have in the first hour tomorrow night's show from 9 to 10, the lovely and talented Susan Cummins will be here with a new book review. We've also got Bree Sanders, national news correspondent, reporting on the strange and weird news from around the United States in the last week. I hope that you'll be a part of that show with us again. Kicks off tomorrow night, 9 p.m. right here on 100.3 K-Talk. Our guest this evening is Dr. Pamela Heath, and we were discussing psychokinesis. Now, let's go back, Dr. Heath. Before the commercial break, I was asking if you had some little tips, things that people can start to do to try to experiment and maybe develop their own abilities.
Yeah, there seem to be two sort of pathways by which you see people able to do mind-matter interaction. The commonest spontaneous, first-time eventers, shall we say, is you're really emotional about something. And I think we've all had a computer that suddenly went haywire on us, and we were frazzled. That could have been your own abilities, I'm sorry to say. And actually, computer techs are pretty well aware that emotion can affect computers. And that's because emotion, when you're feeling it very strongly, is one way of being able to get into sort of an altered state of consciousness that lets you affect things around you. And if you think about it, if you're really angry or really sad or really happy, whatever, you're not thinking so much about yourself. You're focused on the mood. So you don't have to be focused on the target. You're focused on one thing. You're feeling energized a lot of times. You have a strong mood going. You're letting go of your identity because you're not thinking about who you are. You're thinking about how you're feeling. And it's all sort of works together to help you do something. But for people who want to be able to do mind-matter interaction consistently, I would suggest meditating on a regular basis. It's a way of learning how to focus your mind. It also helps you understand different states of consciousness. Hypnosis is another way that helps you understand different states of consciousness. And we're talking about normal ones. We're not talking about drug-induced. It's very hard for somebody who's experienced this to describe the state of consciousness that you use when you're doing mind-matter interaction. I know for me, I think of it as like you're tuning a radio, and your consciousness is a radio, and you're going to change to a different station. And it's not very far off from the normal station. It's just this little bit to the left or this little bit to the right, depending on what feels right to you. It's very important to be playful, not to approach it too seriously, too. I think a great way for beginners to do this is to get together and do an old-fashioned PK party, spoon-bending party, where you get some silverware that you're not terribly attached to, and you all get together in a group, and you start yelling, bend, 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 and every once in a while you test it to see if the metal's gotten softer. About 85% of people who go to a metal-bending party succeed the first time.
Really?
Well, it's interesting.
Metal bending parties, that's going to knock the other little Tupperware parties out of business if we're able to start bending metal on this. I've never even heard of that.
People don't do it again. That's true. Interesting. If you go back to the people who succeeded the first time, a lot of times I think it kind of freaks them out that they actually succeeded. They don't ever do it again.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
See, I would think that would be the excitement. That would keep me getting more and more geared.
Jack Hawk has done a tremendous number of studies on this. And, there are a few who will go on and do it again. Or you'll collect a certain amount of bent silverware and you go, okay, I've done enough. I've got a collection. They sometimes give pieces away. But it's fun to do it. And there's something about a group atmosphere, getting the group energy. Remember, you don't want to do this when you're tired. You want to do it when you're feeling upbeat, energized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of helpful, again, when you're a beginner and you don't know how to trust the process, if you have people who can distract you for a minute. There's something about that moment of distraction where one minute you're focusing on the spoon and then you look at somebody else's spoon bending and then you look at yours and it's bent too. that can be very helpful for beginners. You can't let your intellect get in the way, though. If people who are busy analyzing what's going on and thinking about it, they don't tend to ever succeed. So you need to sort of forget about yourself. You have to shut down that rational, analyzing, thinking part of yourself, mm-hmm. and just be playful, be open to it, have some fun, you know. And
well, you mentioned hypnosis a few minutes ago.
Yeah,
I'm curious about with hypnosis, though. You know, especially when I'm learning things about like past life regression and so on. You know, there's so many of these. You know, my buddy is big into the Civil War and reads all the books and, you know, paints miniatures of Civil War characters. You know, it could be real easy for his mind to mask or fake or create his own little fantasy world, right? And if you're doing a hypnosis regression, can't we in fact be influencing that isn't really the storyline of our prior life, but just what we want it to be?
Yeah, that's true. Some people have tried to prove it by coming up with information mm-hmm. that was unique, and they had to research and find out. But there's no way to say that couldn't be ESP either. I think most psychologists, the way we approach it, is to say, don't get hung up on the details and use it as a metaphor.
Well, when you say that, what about the you said that reincarnation is something that's really impressive to you because
yeah.
you feel that that's more the proof.
You're talking 3-year-olds, not kids, not people under hypnosis. You're talking
right.
usually about 3 to 5, kids who can speak an entire other language they've never been exposed to, tell you everything about the history of their previous life, sometimes have birthmarks that match how they died.
How do we know, though, that didn't, you know, as you're mentioning, we could just be, you know, psychically
yes,
linking in. What if they're just kind of tapping into the Akashic records and that just happens to be the energy that they're able to read really well because it's in the same vibrational level?
It's a possibility, but it's one heck of an ESP ability to be able to be that specific. I think it's the birthmarks that make you wonder. When you have physical marks on a body, that's, you know, yeah, that could be mind-matter interaction, but why would they? Why would a 3-year-old care?
Right, but, well, do you think, though, that could have anything to do with energy? You know, I know when we were at the Queen Mary, you had sensed a couple of the spirits that were around there, and we find through a lot of the case studies that I've been reading up on and have been involved in that sometimes, even like we were talking in the beginning about depression, sometimes spirits can actually attach to you and kind of leech off your energy. Could it just be the energy of Pamela Heath's grandfather that attached to my 3-year-old son? And, you know, it's that energy transference that causes the birthmark or causes similar markings to, you know, death images or things like that. Is there any validity to that? Do they ever find any, you know, point that it could just be more of a spiritual attachment than it is an actual reincarnation?
No, I think psychics have been around. You can usually, I mean, if you're psychic, you can feel if somebody's attached or hanging around another person. And you would also expect, unless they were there from the moment of their birth on, you would expect to see a change.
Well, that's what I'm curious about, though. Is
and
if
why does it always disappear about age 5? If it's a spirit attachment, you would expect it to continue.
Maybe because around that age is when we start developing enough of our own personality that is stronger than the energy that's, you know,
I don't think so. I mean, there are a lot of possibilities for how the reincarnation exists, that it may not be a discrete personality.
Do you think that maybe some of the psychic, or I shouldn't say psychic, but some of the paranormal experiences that we have that happen to us may be through reincarnation is maybe, you know, how some people, you and I could be standing there and I see a ghost that you do not see, or I see a spirit that you do not see. Mm-hmm. Could it possibly be that all it was a leftover or a vivid memory from my last lifetime that I might be experiencing and witnessing is what I would think is a ghost?
Sort of like a hallucination.
Right. And that may be why it's communicating with me, and I don't know why. I don't understand
I think
who it is.
More likely, it's that thing about what I said about consciousness being like a radio where you tune it up and down, and you'll find different people have an easier time connecting with different levels of energy. And there are times when somebody else will see a spirit. I won't initially, but if I sort of scan the spectrum and sort of slide, you know, dial, tune my radio up and down, looking to see what's there. Sometimes, you know, I go, oh, yeah, there is something there. It's like, yeah, it's really low. And vice versa, that they'll sometimes have trouble, they'll communicate that they have trouble talking to some people because they have to lower their vibrations to match ours to be able to communicate.
Are there ways that you could recommend people can open that line of communication and tune in their personal CB to find? I mean, there's got to be
meditation.
Just through meditation. Meditation's the answer to everything.
And prayer is a form of meditation, by the way.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, yeah, I guess so, because it's a focused thought or energy pattern.
Activity. That's right. And you're not thinking about yourself. You're usually focused on something other than yourself, something greater than yourself. That's why a lot of mind matter interaction occurs in religious settings. I think.
All right.
I mean, certainly, even the Catholic Church will say that not all of what they see is what they would call a divine miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is human abilities that get manifest. But I do want to mention the book I have coming out.
Well, let's do that when we come back. This is our last break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the brand new book coming out. Will that work?
Okay. Yeah.
All right, great. And as a matter of fact, let's give away one more book before a break. I've got Revelation Unveiled is the name of the book, and it's available right now. And why don't we give that out to the 20th caller, and we'll do that right now. If you're interested, 651-989-5855, 651-989-5855. For the 20th caller, you can get the book, Revelation Unveiled. You're listening to Darkness Radio. We'll be back with Dr. Pamela Heath right after this on 100.3 K-Talk.
Click it or sit in it. Know the latest traffic conditions before you leave work at KTLKFM.com. Keyword traffic.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. We're in wrap-up mode here. It's gone by fast for us this evening, Dr. Heath. That usually means it's been a fun interview, and it has been for me, and I can't wait to see you again on the Queen Mary here in September. Let's talk about the new book, and what's the title of the book?
It is Handbook to the Afterlife.
Excellent. Boy, I could use that now. what's this book about? And then fill us in.
Yeah, it's going to be out in April 2010 from North Atlantic Books. And basically it looks at the different stages in the afterlife as a continuation of sort of the ongoing lifespan development. You know, just as we go through different stages in childhood, you have kids, you know what that's like.
Yes.
Formal operations, et cetera. It appears that you actually go through different stages in the afterlife. And we talk about the different stages, the different pitfalls. We also do talk about how you can open up communication with those on the other side, including the use of dreams and EVP and other things. And we originally did this book because after we did the suicide book, we got a lot of feedback from people that they were afraid to read the book. And even though there was a lot of really helpful information in it, even for people who, you know, had nothing to do with suicide, it just talks about different stages in the afterlife and what may go on. And people just didn't want to read it. And so we said, okay, let's take the suicide material out. Let's reorganize the material, and let's just focus on the afterlife as a general topic, and let's make it shorter than the other book, you know, and just a quick, simple read. And we don't have all the quotes. We're not trying to prove anything. We're just saying, look, we've read all this material. This is what seems to happen.
All right, interesting. What is there stuff you can put people's mind to ease at? I mean, I've talked about it on my show, you know, for 4 years now, my overwhelming fear of death. From your understanding, we've got about 6.5 minutes left here.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell people from your understanding and your research of death, and what comes next? What do we do? Where do we go?
Well, one thing that I do know is that none of us quite know what happens. So I don't want to put myself out there as an expert who has all the final answers, but consciousness continues. You will get to see again people you love and you care about. Love is a bond that continues beyond the veil. Yeah, you'll continue to love and care about those left behind, and you will get to see again those you love and care about who have already passed on ahead of you. And you'll go through probably the stage of looking at your own life and reviewing it, but you'll do it with the help of others. They won't be judging you. It's not harsh in that sense. You may be harsh on yourself, but they tend to be much more understanding than you might think. And you'll have opportunities then to choose what you want to do in the afterlife. People do different kinds of spiritual work. Some people will come back, spend time as guides for the living. Some will work as guides for the newly dead. Some may continue to research. I think if we believe much of the channel literature, some people actually try to make contact. They may be some of the ones that we get EVPs from, or instrumental transcommunication, is that there are actually teams of scientists on the other side trying to bridge this gap. But it's your choice. You get to choose what you want to do. And to me, it's very exciting in some ways. One of the things I had long before I studied hypnosis is I was having spontaneous past life recall, and also, even more importantly, remembering the periods between lives when I was in the afterlife. And I got to tell you, it's wonderful. I mean, that's what you hear from near-death experiencers sometimes, too. They just want to go back.
Right. Well,
so nice over there.
What do you remember from it? I mean, what's going on there in that veil between?
For me, I was doing a lot of exploring and learning, and it was very peaceful. You know, I just remember you, especially, I think, I don't know how you are, you know, when you first transfer over. I mean, there may be adjustment phases for many people, but as you continue to work your way up to higher levels, and you get closer and closer to what people like to call the source or the light or whatever you want to call it, it's unconditional love, and it's just sort of this amazing feeling of unconditional love, like you don't experience very often, if at all, in life.
Now, when you say that, now that's interesting to me because I did have my grandfather visit me shortly after his death, mm-hmm. and that's how he explained love to me, is that it was a universal thing. It wasn't an ownership thing that we feel here on Earth, if you will, where, you know, right. I love you, I love that, you know, you've got that sense of title to it. Love is just like a universal, sounds very hippie in theory, but that's basically what he was saying to me, is that, you know, love is a totally different elevation.
I try to explain it. It's like we're surfers, and love is the ocean that supports us, and we don't realize we're supported, but it's like always there. It's always under us. It's always supporting us. We may not even pay attention to it or be aware of it. We're focused on the waves or the surface, but it's there.
Now, and you said this book, though, is not coming out until April 2010.
It'll be April 2010, but it's to me, it's kind of an exciting book because it really looks at the afterlife in a different way. It looks at it from the perspective of continuing lifespan development, that the life doesn't end with death, but continues on, and these are the different stages, and these are the things that you'll go, you know, that most people go through in more or less an order, you know, including the reunion phase and life review, self-judgment, spiritual work, those kinds of things, and where people get stuck, and then how can you communicate with those on the other side?
Do spirits actually get stuck? Do they not know they're dead? Does that really happen?
Oh, yeah.
Really, what do they think is going on when nobody's responding to them or talking to them?
He saw The Sixth Sense.
Right. So it's just that they're kind of in that veil of reality as they see it, and their consciousness thinks that they're dealing with things on a...
You see what you expect to see.
Okay.
We do this when we're alive, too. It's even worse for the dead. They don't have eyes. Excuse me, dry
sure.
throat. They don't have hands. You can't shake them on the shoulder and say, hey, snap out of it. So they notice what they want to notice or what they're willing to notice, and they block out the rest.
Amazing.
And people who are depressed, they may sort of exist in this gray fog.
I can see that. So it's just, it's almost like a disassociation where they wouldn't be dealing with life or reality as we see it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
and they feel alive. They don't feel like they're dead. And you hear this over and over.
But when you start communicating with them and you tell them you're dead, I mean, is there a shock and awe to them at that point of, oh, my God, what? Or do they think you're just pulling their leg?
Depends on the spirit. Depends on their personality. I mean, it's your personality continues into the afterlife, at least initially. Until you've done your life review and worked through some of your issues, your personality is basically the same as it was when you were alive. If you were argumentative when you were alive, you're going to be argumentative when you're dead.
Well, right. I think Marianne Winkowski, our guest, the real Ghost Whisperer, said, you know, as in life, so in death. Do you recommend telling the spirits? Is it like waking up a sleepwalker? Do you tell them, hey, you're dead?
Well, what I find, if you have a spirit that doesn't understand it's dead, the information does come best from the living. And I'll usually, you know, I'll start by saying, yeah, you're dead. And, gee, do you see that bright light over there? And do you hear the people trying to get your attention over there, you know? And then you sort of go from there, whether they believe you or not.
Well, Dr. I got to wrap it up. I'm sorry they're queuing me out of here, but we'll be talking to you more, and I look forward to seeing you on the Queen Mary in September. Again, everybody check that out, darknessevents.com for the Darkness Radio Science Fair, and you'll be able to meet Dr. Pamela Heath there. Check in with us tomorrow, kids. We got Robert Bess in his ghost containment chamber. You're listening to Darkness Radio on 100.3 K-Talk.